place, but they won't be weeping with fear, you can be sure. In the well of the main deck, the oarsmen were working hard. Normally there would be two men on each oar, but Rodriguez had ordered three for strength and safety and speed. Others were waiting below decks to spell these rowers when he gave the order. On the foredeck, the captain oarmaster was experienced, and his beat was slow, timed to the waves. The galley was still making way, though every moment the roll seemed more pronounced and the recovery slower. Then the squalls became erratic and threw the captain oarmaster off stroke.
"Watch out for it!"
Blackthorne and Rodriguez shouted almost in the same breath. The galley rolled sickeningly. 20 oars pulled at air instead of sea, and there was chaos aboard. The first coma had struck, and the port gunwale was awash. They were floundering.
"Go for it!" Rodriguez ordered. "Get them to ship half the oars each side! Madonna, hurry, hurry!"
Blackthorne knew that without his lifeline, he could easily be carried overboard. But the oars had to be shipped, or they were lost. He slipped the knot and fought along the heaving, greasy deck, down the short gangway to the main deck. Abruptly, the galley swerved, and he was carried to the downside, his legs taken away by some of the rowers, who had also slipped their safety lines to try to fight order into their oars. The gunwale was underwater, and one man went overboard. Blackthorne felt himself going, too. His hand caught the gunwale, his tendons stretched, but his grip held. Then his other hand reached the rail, and choking, he pulled himself back. His feet found the deck, and he shook himself, thanking God, and thought,
"There's your seventh life gone." Alban Caradoc had always said a good pilot had to be like a cat, except that the pilot had to have at least 10 lives, whereas a cat is satisfied with 9.
A man was at his feet, and he dragged him from the grip of the sea, held him until he was safe, then helped him to his place. He looked back at the quarterdeck to curse Rodriguez for letting the helm get away from him. Rodriguez waved and pointed and shouted, the shout swallowed by a squall. Blackthorne saw their course had changed. Now they were almost into the wind, and he knew the swerve had been planned.
"Wise," he thought. "That'll give us a respite to get organized. But the bastard could have warned me. I don't like losing lives unnecessarily."
He waved back and hurled himself into the work of resorting the rowers. All rowing had stopped except for the two oars most forward, which kept them tidily into the wind. With signs and yelling, Blackthorne got the oars shipped, doubled up the men on the working ones, and went aft again. The men were stoic, and though some were very sick, they stayed and waited for the next order. The bay was closer, but it still seemed a million leagues away. To the northeast, the sky was dark. Rain whipped them, and the gusts strengthened. In Erasmus, Blackthorne would not have been worried. They could have made harbour easily, or could have turned back carelessly onto their real course, heading for their proper landfall. His ship was built and rigged for weather. This galley was not.
"What do you think, Inglés?"
"You'll do what you want, whatever I think,"
he shouted against the wind.
"But she won't take much water, and will go down like a stone. And the next time I go for it, tell me you're putting her into wind. Better still, put her to windward while I've my line on, and then we'll both reach port."
"That was the hand of God, Inglés. A wave slammed her rump around.
That nearly put me overboard. I saw."
Blackthorne was measuring their drift.
"If we stay on this course, we'll never make the bay. We'll be swept past the headland by a mile or more.
I'm going to stay into the wind. Then, when the time's ripe, we'll stab for the shore. Can you swim?"
"Yes."
"Good. I never learned. Too dangerous. Better to drown quickly than slow, eh?"
Rodriguez shuddered involuntarily.
"Blessed Madonna, protect me from a water grave. This sow-bellied whore of a ship's going to get to harbour tonight. Has to. My nose says if we turn and run, we'll founder. We're too heavily laden. Lighten her. Throw the cargo overboard." "King told you'd never agree. He has to arrive with it,
or he might as well not arrive.
Ask him.
Madonna, are you deaf? I've told you, I know he won't agree.
Rodriguez went closer to the helmsman and made sure they understood they were to keep heading into the wind without fail.
Watch them, Inglés! You have the con!
He untied his lifeline and went down the gangway, sure-footed. The rowers watched him intently as he walked to the captain's stand on the fore-poop deck to explain with signs and with words the plan he had in mind. Hiromatsu and Yabu came on deck. The captain's stand explained the plan to them. Both men were pale, but they remained impassive and neither vomited. They looked shoreward through the rain, shrugged, and went below again. Blackthorn stared at the bay to port. He knew the plan was dangerous. They would have to wait until they were just past the near headland. Then they would have to fall off from the wind, turn northwest again, and pull for their lives. The sail wouldn't help them. It would have to be their strength alone. The southern side of the bay was rock-fanged and reefed. If they misjudged the timing, they would be driven ashore there and wrecked.
Inglés! Lay forward!
The Portuguese was beckoning him. He went forward.
What about the sail?
Rodriguez shouted.
No, that'll hurt more than help. You stay here then! If the captain fails with the beat, or we lose him, you take it up. All right? I've never sailed one of these before. I've never mastered oars. But I'll try.
Rodriguez looked landward. The headland appeared and disappeared in the driving rain. Soon he would have to make the stab. The seas were growing and already whitecaps fled from the crests. The race between the headlands looked evil.
This one's going to be filthy, he thought.
Then he spat and decided.
Go aft, Inglés. Take the helm. When I signal, go west-northwest for that point. You see it?
Yes.
Don't hesitate and hold that course. Watch me closely. This sign means hard a port. This hard a starboard. This steady as she goes.
Very well.
By the Virgin, you'll wait for my orders, and you'll obey my orders?
You want me to take the helm or not?
Rodriguez knew he was trapped.
I have to trust you, Inglés, and I hate trusting you. Go aft, he said.
He saw Blackthorn read what was behind his eyes and walk away. Then he changed his mind and called after him.
Hey, you arrogant pirate! Go with God!
Blackthorn turned back gratefully.
And you, Spaniard! Peace on all, Spaniards, and long live Portugal! Steady as she goes.
They made harbour, but without Rodriguez. He was washed overboard when his lifeline snapped. The ship had been on the brink of safety when the great wave came out of the north, and though they had taken much water previously, and had already lost the Japanese captain. Now they were awash and driven backward towards the rock-infested shore. Blackthorn saw Rodriguez go, and he watched him, gasping and struggling in the churning sea. The storm and the tide had taken them far to the south side of the bay, and they were almost on the rocks, all aboard knowing that the ship was lost. As Rodriguez was swept alongside, Blackthorn threw him a wooden life ring. The Portuguese flailed for the life ring, but the sea swept it out of his reach. An oar crashed into him, and he grabbed for it. The rain slashed down, and the last Blackthorn saw of Rodriguez was an arm and the broken oar, and just ahead, the surf raging against the tormented shore. He could have dived overboard and swum to him and survived, perhaps. There was time, perhaps. But his first duty was to his ship, and his last duty was to his ship, and his ship was in danger. So he turned his back on Rodriguez. The wave had taken some rowers with it, and others were struggling to fill the empty places. A mate had bravely slipped his safety line. He jumped onto the foredeck, secured himself, and restarted the beat. The chant leader also began again. The rowers tried to get order out of chaos.
Isogi!
Blackthorn shouted, remembering the word. He bent his weight on the helm to help get the bow more into wind. Then went to the rail and beat time, called out,
"One, two, one, two,"
trying to encourage the crew.
"Come on, you bastards! Pull!"
The galley was on the rocks. At least the rocks were just astern and to port and to starboard. The oars dipped and pulled, but still the ship made no way, the wind and the tide winning, dragging her backward perceptibly.
"Come on! Pull, you bastards!"
Blackthorn shouted again, his hand beating time. The rowers took strength from him. First they held their own with the sea. Then they conquered her. The ship moved away from the rocks. Blackthorn held the course for the lee shore. Soon they were in calmer waters. There was still gale, but it was overhead. There was still tempest, but it was out to sea.
"Let go the starboard anchor!"
No one understood the words, but all seamen knew what was wanted. They rushed to do his bidding. The anchor splashed over the side. He let the ship fall off slightly to test the firmness of the seabed, the mate and rowers understanding his maneuver.
"Let go the port anchor!"
When his ship was safe, he looked aft. The cruel shoreline could hardly be seen through the rain. He gauged the sea and considered possibilities.
"The Portuguese's rudder is below," he thought, drained. "I can con the ship to Osaka. I could con it back to Anjiro. But were you right to disobey him?" "I didn't disobey Rodriguez. I was on the quarterdeck. Alone."
"Steer south!"
Rodriguez had screamed when the wind and the tide carried them perilously near the rocks.
"Turn and run before the wind!"
"No!"
he had shouted back, believing their only chance was to try for the harbour and that in the open sea they'd flounder.
"We can make it!"
"God curse you! You'll kill us all!"
"But I didn't kill anyone,"
Blackthorn thought.
"Rodriguez, you knew, and I knew, that it was my responsibility to decide, if there was a time of decision. I was right. The ship's safe. Nothing else matters."
He beckoned to the mate, who hurried from the foredeck. Both helmsmen had collapsed, their arms and legs almost torn from their sockets. The rowers were like corpses, fallen helplessly over their oars. Others weakly came from below to help. Hiromatsu and Yabu, both badly shaken, were assisted onto the deck. But once on deck, both daimyos stood erect.
"Hey, engine-san?"
the mate asked. He was a middle-aged man with strong white teeth and a broad, weather-beaten face. A livid bruise marked his cheek, where the sea had battered him against the gunwale.
"You did very well,"
Blackthorn said, not caring that his words would not be understood. He knew his tone would be clear, and his smile.
"Yes, very well. You're captain-san now. Wakarimasu. You, captain-san."
The man stared at him open-mouthed, then he bowed to hide both his astonishment and his pleasure.
"Wakarimasu, anjin-san. Hai, arigato gozaimashita."
"Listen, captain-san,"
Blackthorn said.
"Get the men food and drink. Hot food. We'll stay here tonight."
With signs, Blackthorn made him comprehend. Immediately, the new captain turned and shouted with new authority. Instantly, seamen ran to obey him. Filled with pride, the new captain looked back at the quarterdeck.
"I wish I could speak your barbarian language,"
he thought happily.
"Then I could thank you, Anjin-san, for saving the ship, and with the ship, the life of our Lord Hiromatsu. Your magic gave us all new strength. Without your magic, we would have floundered. You may be a pirate, but you are a great seaman. And while you are pilot, I will obey you with my life. I'm not worthy to be captain, but I will try to deserve your trust."
"What do you want me to do next?"
he asked. Blackthorn was looking over the side. The seabed was obscured. He took mental bearings, and when he was sure that the anchors had not slipped and the sea was safe, he said,
"Launch the skiff, and get a good sculler."
Again, with signs and with words, Blackthorn made himself understood. The skiff was launched and manned instantly. Blackthorn went to the gunwale and would have scaled down the side, but a harsh voice stopped him. He looked around. Hiromatsu was there, Yabu beside him. The old man was badly bruised about the neck and shoulders, but he still carried the long sword. Yabu was bleeding from his nose, his face bruised, his kimono blotched, and he tried to staunch the flow with the small piece of material. Both men were impassive, seemingly unaware of their hurts or the chill of the wind. Blackthorn bowed politely.
Hi, Toda-sama?
Again the harsh words, and the old man pointed with his sword at the skiff and shook his head.
Rodrigo-san, there!
Blackthorn pointed to the south shore in answer.
I go look!
Iye!
Hiromatsu shook his head again and spoke at length, clearly refusing him permission because of the danger.
I'm Anjin-san of this Horbit ship, and if I want to go ashore, I'm going ashore.
Blackthorn kept his voice very polite but strong, and it was equally obvious what he meant.
I know that skiff won't live in that sea. Hey? But I'm going ashore there. By that point, you see that point, Toda Hiromatsu-sama? By that small rock. I'm going to work my way around the headland. There. I'm in no hurry to die, and I've nowhere to run. I want to get Rodrigo-san's body.
He cocked a leg over the side. The scabbarded sword moved a fraction. So he froze. But his gaze was level, his face set. Hiromatsu was in a dilemma. He could understand the pirate wanting to find Rodrigo-san's body, but it was dangerous to go there, even by foot, and Lord Toranaga had said to bring the barbarian back safely. So he was going to be brought safely. It was equally clear that the man intended to go. He had seen him during the storm, standing on the pitchin deck like an evil sea kami, unafraid, in his element, and part of the storm. And he had thought grimly at the time,
better to get this man and all barbarians like him on the land, where we can deal with them. At sea, we're in their power.
He could see the pirate was impatient.
How insulting they are, he told himself. Even so, I should thank you. Everyone says you alone are responsible for bringing the ship to harbor, that the Rodrigo Anjin lost his nerve and waved us away from land. But you held your course. Yes. If we'd gone out to sea, we'd have sunk certainly, and then I would have failed my master. Oh, Buddha, protect me from that.
All his joints were aching, and his piles inflamed. He was exhausted by the effort it took to remain stoic in front of his men, Yabu, the crew, even this barbarian.
Oh, Buddha, I'm so tired. I wish I could lie in a bath and soak and soak and have one day of rest from pain. Just one day. Stop your stupid womanish thoughts. You've been in pain for almost 60 years. What is pain to a man? A privilege. Masking pain is the measure of a man. Thank Buddha you are still alive to protect your master when you should have been dead 1,000 times. I do thank Buddha. But I hate the sea. I hate the cold. And I hate pain. Stay where you are, Anjin-san, he said,
pointing with his scabbard for clarity, bleakly amused by the ice-blue fire in the man's eyes. When he was sure the man understood, he glanced at the mate.
Where are we? Whose fief is this?
I don't know, sire. I think we're somewhere in Ise province. We could send someone ashore to the nearest village.
Can you pilot us to Osaka?
Providing we stay very close to shore, sire, and go slowly, with great caution. I don't know these waters, and I could never guarantee your safety. I don't have enough knowledge, and there's no one aboard, sire, who has, except this pilot. If it was left to me, I would advise you to go by land. We could get you horses or palanquins.
Hiromatsu shook his head irascibly. To go overland was out of the question. It would take far too long. The way was mountainous, and there were few roads. And they would have to go through many territories controlled by allies of Ishido, the enemy. Added to this danger were also the multitudinous bandit groups that infested the passes. This would mean he would have to take all his men. Certainly he could fight his way through the bandits, but he could never force a passage if Ishido or his allies decided to inhibit him. All this would delay him further, and his orders were to deliver the cargo, the barbarian, and Yabu, quickly and safely.
If we followed the coast, how long would it take us?
I don't know, sire. 4 or 5 days, perhaps more. I would feel very unsure of myself. I'm not a captain. So sorry.
Which means, Hiromatsu thought, that I have to have the cooperation of this barbarian. To prevent him going ashore, I'll have to tie him up. And who knows if he'll be cooperative tied up. How long will we have to stay here?
The pilot said overnight.
Will the storm be gone by then?
It should, sire, but one never knows.
Hiromatsu studied the mountain coast, then the pilot, hesitating.
May I offer a suggestion, Hiromatsu-san? Yabu said. Yes, yes, of course, he said testily. As we seem to need the pirate's cooperation to get us to Osaka, why not let him go ashore, but send men with him to protect him, and order them back before dark? As to going overland, I agree it would be too dangerous for you. I would never forgive myself if anything happened to you. Once the storm has blown itself out, you'll be safer with the ship, and you'll get to Osaka much quicker, eh? Surely by sunset tomorrow.
Reluctantly, Hiromatsu nodded.
Very well.
He beckoned a samurai.
Takadashi-san, you will take 6 men and go with the pilot. Bring the Portuguese's body back if you can find it. But if even one of this barbarian's eyelashes is damaged, you and your men will commit seppuku instantly.
Yes, Lord.
And send 2 men to the nearest village, and find out exactly where we are, and in whose fief we are.
Yes, Lord.
With your permission, Hiromatsu-san, I will lead the party ashore.
Yabu said,
if we arrived in Osaka without the pirate, I'd be so ashamed that I'd feel obliged to kill myself anyway. I'd like the honor of carrying out your orders.
Hiromatsu nodded, inwardly surprised that Yabu would put himself in such jeopardy. He went below. When Blackthorn realized that Yabu was going ashore with him, his pulse quickened.
I haven't forgotten Petersoon, or my crew, or the pit, or the screams, or Omi, or any part of it. Look to your life, bastard.
Chapter 9. They were quickly on land. Blackthorn intended to lead, but Yabu usurped that position and set a strong pace, which he was hard put to keep up with. The other 6 samurai were watching him carefully.
I've nowhere to run, you fools, he thought, misunderstanding their concern,
as his eyes automatically quartered the bay, looking for shoals or hidden reefs, measuring bearings, his mind docketing the important things for future transcription. Their way led first along the pebbled shore, then a short climb over sea-smoothed rocks up onto a path that skirted the cliff and crept precariously around the headland southward. The rain had stopped, but the gale had not. The closer they came to the exposed tongue of land, the higher the surf, hurled against the rocks below, sprayed into the air. Soon they were soaked. Although Blackthorn felt chilled, Yabu and the others, who had their light kimonos carelessly tucked into their belts, did not seem to be affected by the wet or the cold.
It must be as Rodriguez had said, he thought,
his fear returning.
Japmen just aren't built like us. They don't feel cold or hunger or privations or wounds as we do. They're more like animals, their nerves dulled compared to us.
Above them, the cliff soared 200 feet. The shore was 50 feet below. Beyond and all around were mountains, and not a house or hut in the whole bay area. This was not surprising, for there was no room for fields, the shore pebbles quickly becoming foreshore rocks, and then granite mountain with trees on the upper slopes. The path dipped and rose along the cliff face, very unsafe, the surface loose. Blackthorn plodded along, leaning against the wind, and noticed that Yabu's legs were strong and muscular.
"Slip, you whore bastard," he thought. "Slip! Splatter yourself on the rocks below. Would that make you scream? What would make you scream?"
With an effort, he took his eyes off Yabu and went back to searching the foreshore. Each crevice and cleft and gully. The spume wind was gusting and tore the tears from him. Sea spilled back and forth, swirled and eddied. He knew there was a minimal hope of finding Rodriguez. There would be too many caves and hidden places that could never be investigated. But he had had to come ashore to try. He owed Rodriguez the try. All pilots prayed helplessly for death ashore and burial ashore. All had seen too many sea-bloated corpses and half-eaten corpses and crab-mutilated corpses. They rounded the headland and stopped gratefully in the lee. There was no need to go further. If the body wasn't to windward, then it was hidden or swallowed up or already carried out to sea, into the deep. Half a mile away, a small fishing village nestled on the white froth shore. Yabu motioned to two of the samurai. Immediately they bowed and loped off toward it. A last look, then Yabu wiped the rain out of his face, glanced up at Blackthorn, motioning their return. Blackthorn nodded, and they set off again, Yabu leading, the other samurai still watching him so carefully. And again he thought, how stupid they were. Then, when they were halfway back, they saw Rodriguez. The body was caught in a cleft between two great rocks, above the surf but washed by part of it. One arm was sprawled in front. The other was still locked to the broken oar, which moved slightly with the ebb and flow. It was this movement that had attracted Blackthorn's attention as he bent into the wind, trudging in Yabu's wake. The only way down was over the short cliff. The climb would only be 50 or 60 feet, but it was a sheer drop, and there were almost no footholds.
"What about the tide?" Blackthorn asked himself. "It's flowing, not ebbing. That'll take him out to sea again. Jesus, it looks foul down there. What's it to be?"
He went closer to the edge, and immediately Yabu moved in his way, shaking his head, and the other samurai surrounded him.
"I'm only trying to get a better look, for the love of Christ," he said. "I'm not trying to escape. Where the hell can I run to?"
He backed off a little and peered down. They followed his look and chatted among themselves, Yabu doing most of the talking.
"There's no chance," he decided. "It's too dangerous. We'll come back at dawn with ropes. If he's here, he's here, and I'll bury him ashore."
Reluctantly, he turned, and as he did, the edge of the cliff crumbled, and he began to slip. Immediately, Yabu and the others grabbed him and pulled him back, and all at once he realized that they were concerned only for his safety.
"They're only trying to protect me. Why should they want me safe? Because of Tora... what was his name? Torenaga? Because of him?"
"Yes, but also perhaps because there's no one else aboard to pilot us.
Is that why they let me come ashore, gave me my way?"
"Yes, it must be.
So now I have power over the ship, over the old daimyo, and over this bastard. How can I use it?"
He relaxed and thanked them, and let his eyes roam below.
"We've got to get him, Yabu-san. Hey, the only way's that way, over the cliff. I'll bring him up. Me, Anjin-san."
Again he moved forward as though he was going to climb down, and again they restrained him, and he said with feigned anxiety,
"We've got to get Rodrigo-san. Look, there's not much time. Light's going."
Iye, Anjin-san,
Yabu said. He stood towering over Yabu.
If you won't let me go, Yabu-san, then send one of your men. Or go yourself. You!
The winds tore around them, whining off the cliff face. He saw Yabu look down, weighing the climb and the falling light, and he knew Yabu was hooked.
You're trapped, bastard. Your vanity's trapped you. If you start down there, you'll get hurt. But don't kill yourself, please. Just shatter your legs or ankles. Then drown.
A samurai began to climb down, but Yabu ordered him back.
Return to the ship. Fetch some ropes immediately,
Yabu said. The man ran off. Yabu kicked off his thong slippers. He took his swords out of his belt and put them safely under cover.
Watch them, and watch the barbarian. If anything happens to either, I'll sit you on your own swords.
Please, let me go down there, Yabu-sama,
Takatashi said.
If you're hurt or lost, I'll...
You think that you can succeed where I will fail?
No, sire, of course not.
Good.
Please wait for the ropes, then. I'll never forgive myself if anything happens to you.
Takatashi was short and stocky with a heavy beard.
Why not wait for the ropes?
Yabu asked himself.
It would be sensible, yes, but not clever.
He glanced up at the barbarian and nodded briefly. He knew that he had been challenged. He had expected it and hoped for it.
That's why I volunteered for this mission, Anjin-san,
he said to himself, silently amused.
You're really very simple. Omi was right.
Yabu took off his soaking kimono and, clad only in his loincloth, went to the cliff edge and tested it through the soles of his cotton tabi, his sock shoes.
Better to keep them on,
he thought, his will and his body, forged by a lifetime of training all samurai had to undergo, dominating the cold that cut into him.
The tabi will give you a firmer grip. For a time. You'll need all your strength and skill to get down there alive. Is it worth it?
During the storm and the stab for the bay, he had come on deck and, unnoticed by Blackthorn, had taken a place at the oars. Gladly he had used his strength with the rowers, detesting the miasma below and the sickness he had felt. He had decided that it was better to die in the air than suffocate below. As he worked with the others in the driving cold, he began watching the pilots. He saw very clearly that at sea, the ship and all aboard were in the power of these two men. The pilots were in their element, riding the pitching decks as carelessly as he himself rode a galloping horse. No Japanese aboard could match them, for skill, or courage, or knowledge. And gradually this awareness had spawned a majestic concept. Modern barbarian ships filled with samurai, piloted by samurai, captained by samurai, filled by samurai. His samurai.
If I had three barbarian ships initially, I could easily control the sea lanes between Edo and Osaka. Based in Izu, I could strangle all shipping or let it pass. So nearly all the rice and all the silk. Wouldn't I then be arbiter between Torunaga and Ishido? At the very least, a balance between them? No daimyo has ever yet taken to the sea. No daimyo has ships or pilots. Except me. I have a ship, had a ship, and now I might have my ship back. If I'm clever. I have a pilot, and therefore a trainer of pilots. If I can get him away from Torunaga. If I can dominate him. Once he is my vassal of his own accord, he will train my men and build ships. But how to make him a true vassal? The pit did not break his spirit. First, get him alone, and keep him alone.
Isn't that what Omi said? Then this pilot could be persuaded to manners and taught to speak Japanese.
Yes. Omi's very clever.
Too clever, perhaps. I'll think about Omi later. Concentrate on the pilot. How to dominate a barbarian. A Christian filth-eater? What was it Omi said? They value life. Their chief deity, Jesus the Christ, teaches them to love one another and to value life.
Could I give him back his life? Save it, yes.
That would be very good. How to bend him.
Yabu had been so swept by his excitement, he'd hardly noticed the motion of the ship or the seas. A wave cascaded over him. He saw it envelop the pilot. But there was no fear in the man at all.
Yabu was astounded.
How could someone who had meekly allowed an enemy to piss on his back to save the life of an insignificant vassal? How could this man have the strength to forget such eternal dishonor and stand there on the quarterdeck, calling the gods of the sea to battle like any legendary hero? To save the same enemies? And then, when the great wave had taken the Portuguese away and they were floundering, the Anjin-san had miraculously laughed at death and given them the strength to pull away from the rocks.
I'll never understand them, he thought.
On the cliff edge, Yabu looked back a last time.
Ah, Anjin-san, I know you think I go to my death, that you've trapped me. I know you wouldn't go down there yourself. I was watching you closely. But I grew up in the mountains, and here in Japan, we climb for pride and for pleasure. So I pit myself now on my terms, not on yours. I will try, and if I die, it is nothing. But if I succeed, then you, as a man, you know I'm better than you, on your terms. You'll be in my debt, too, if I bring the body back. You will be my vassal, Anjin-san.
He went down the side of the cliff with great skill. When he was halfway down, he slipped. His left hand held on to an outcrop. This stopped his fall, and he swung between life and death. His fingers dug deeply as he felt his grip failing, and he ground his toes into a crevice, fighting for another hold. As his left hand ripped away, his toes found a cleft and they held, and he hugged the cliff desperately, still off balance, pressing against it, seeking holds. Then his toe hold gave way. Though he managed to catch another outcrop with both hands, 10 feet below, and hang on momentarily, this outcrop gave way too. He fell the last 20 feet. He had prepared as best he could, and landed on his feet like a cat, tumbled the sloping rock face to break the shock, and came to rest in a wheezing ball. He clutched his lacerated arms around his head, protecting himself against the stone avalanche that could follow. But none did. He shook his head to clear it, and got up. One ankle was twisted. A searing pain shot up his leg into his bowels, and the sweat started. His toes and fingernails were bleeding, but that was to be expected.
There's no pain. You will not feel pain. Stand upright. The barbarian is watching.
A column of spray doused him, and the cold helped to ease the hurt. With care, he slid over the seaweeded boulders and eased himself across the crevices, and then he was at the body. Abruptly, Yabu realized that the man was still alive. He made sure, then sat back for a moment.
Do I want him alive or dead? Which is better?
A crab scuttled from under a rock and plopped into the sea. Waves rushed in. He felt the salt rip his wounds.
Which is better? Alive or dead?
He got up precariously and shouted,
Takatachi-san! This pilot's still alive! Go to the ship! Bring a stretcher and a doctor, if there's one on the ship!
Takatashi's words came back faintly against the wind.
Yes, Lord!
And to his men as he ran off,
Watch the barbarian! Don't let anything happen to him!
Yabu peered at the galley, riding her anchors gently. The other samurai he had sent back for ropes was already beside the skiffs. He watched while the man jumped into one and it was launched. He smiled to himself, glanced back. Blackthorn had come to the edge of the cliff and was shouting urgently at him.
What is she trying to say?
Yabu asked himself. He saw the pilot pointing to the sea, but that didn't mean anything to him. The sea was rough and strong, but it was no different from before. Eventually, Yabu gave up trying to understand and turned his attention to Rodriguez. With difficulty, he eased the man up onto the rocks, out of the surf. The Portuguese's breathing was halting, but his heart seemed strong. There were many bruises. A splintered bone jutted through the skin of the left calf. His right shoulder seemed dislocated. Yabu looked for blood seepage from any openings, but there was none.
If he's not hurt inside, then perhaps he will live, he thought.
The daimyo had been wounded too many times and had seen too many dying and wounded not to have gained some measure of diagnostic skill.
If Rodrigo can be kept warm, he decided, given sake and strong herbs, plenty of warm baths, he'll live. He may not walk again, but he'll live.
Yes, I want this man to live.
If he can't walk, no matter, perhaps that would be better. I'll have a spare pilot. This man certainly owes me his life. If the pirate won't cooperate, perhaps I can use this man. Would it be worthwhile to pretend to become a Christian? Would that bring them both around to me? What would Omi do? That one's clever, Omi.
Yes.
Too clever? Omi sees too much too fast. If he can see that far, he must perceive that his father would lead the clan if I vanish. My son's too inexperienced yet to survive by himself. And after the father, Omi himself. Ne? What to do about Omi? Say I gave Omi to the barbarian. As a toy. What about that?
There were anxious shouts from above. Then he realized what the barbarian had been pointing at. The tide. The tide was coming in fast. Already it was encroaching on his rock. He scrambled up and winced at a shaft of pain from his ankle. All other escape along the shore was blocked by the sea. He saw that the tide mark on the cliff was over a man's full height above the base. He looked at the skiff. It was near the ship now. On the foreshore, Takatashi was still running well.
The ropes won't arrive in time, he told himself.
His eyes searched the area diligently. There was no way up the cliff. No rocks offered sanctuary. No caves. Out to sea there were outcrops, but he could never reach them. He could not swim, and there was nothing to use as a raft. The men above were watching him. The barbarian pointed to the outcrop seaward and made motions of swimming, but he shook his head. He searched carefully again. Nothing.
There's no escape, he thought. Now you are committed to death. Prepare yourself. Come, he told himself,
and turned away from them, settling himself more comfortably, enjoying the vast clarity that had come to him.
Last day, last sea, last light, last joy, last everything. How beautiful the sea and the sky, and the cold and salt.
He began to think of the final poem song that he should now, by custom, compose. He felt fortunate. He had time to think clearly. Blackthorn was shouting.
Listen, you whore bastard! Find a ledge! There's got to be a ledge somewhere!
The samurai was standing in his way, gazing at him as though he were a madman. It was clear to them there was no escape, and that Yabu was simply preparing for a sweet death, as they would be doing if they had been he. and they resented these ravings, as they knew Yabu would.
"Look down there, all of you! Maybe there's a ledge!"
One of them went to the edge and peered down, shrugged, and talked to his comrades, and they shrugged too. Each time Blackthorn tried to go closer to the edge to search for an escape, they stopped him. He could have easily shoved one of them to his death, and he was tempted to. But he understood them and their problems.
"Think of a way to help that bastard. You've got to save him to save Rodriguez." "Hey, you rotten, no-good, piss-scatting, shit-tail Japman! Hey, Kashigi Yabu! Where are your cojones? Don't give up! Only cowards give up! Are you a man or a sheep?"
But Yabu paid no attention. He was as still as the rock upon which he sat. Blackthorn picked up a stone and hurled it at him. It fell unnoticed into the water, and the samurai shouted at Blackthorn angrily. He knew that at any moment they were going to fall on him and bind him up.
But how could they? They've no rope. "Rope! Get some rope! Can you make some?"
His eyes fell on Yabu's kimono. He started tearing it into strips, testing them for strength. The silk was very strong.
"Come on!"
he ordered the samurai, taking off his own shirt.
"Make a rope! Hi!"
They understood. Rapidly they untied their sashes, took off their kimonos and copied him. He began knotting the ends, sashes as well. While they completed the rope, Blackthorn carefully lay down an inch for the edge, making two of them hold onto his ankles for safety. He didn't need their help, but he wanted to reassure them. He stuck his head out as far as he dared, conscious of their anxiety. Then he began to search as he would search at sea. Quarter by quarter, using every part of his vision, but mostly the sides.
"A complete sweep. Once more. Nothing. Again. What's that? Just above the tide line. Is it a crack in the cliff? Or a shadow?"
Blackthorn shifted position, keenly aware that the sea had almost covered the rock that Yabu sat on, and almost all of the rocks between him and the base of the cliff. Now he could see better, and he pointed.
"There! What's that?"
One of the samurai was on his hands and knees, and he followed Blackthorn's outstretched finger, but saw nothing.
"There! Isn't that a ledge?"
With his hands he formed the ledge, and with two fingers made a man, and stood the man on the ledge, and with another finger made a long bundle over the shoulder of the man, so now a man stood on the ledge. That ledge, with another over his shoulder.
"Quick! Isogi! Make him understand! Kashigi Yabu-sama! Wakarimasuka?"
The man scrambled up and talked rapidly to the others, and they looked too. Now they all saw the ledge, and they began to shout. Still no movement from Yabu. He seemed like a stone. They went on, and Blackthorn added his shouts, but it was as if they made no sound at all. One of them spoke to the others briefly, and they all nodded and bowed. He bowed back. Then, with the sudden screaming shout of, "Banzai!" he cast himself off the cliff and fell to his death. Yabu came violently out of his trance, whirled around, and scrambled up. The other samurai shouted and pointed, but Blackthorn heard nothing and saw nothing but the broken corpse that lay below, already being taken by the sea.
"What kind of men are these?" he thought helplessly. "Was that courage? Or just insanity? That man deliberately committed suicide on the off chance he'd attract the attention of another man who had given up. It doesn't make sense. They don't make sense."
He saw Yabu stagger up. He expected him to scramble for safety, leaving Rodriguez.
"That's what I would have done. Is it? I don't know."
But Yabu half-crawled, half-slid, dragging the unconscious man with him through the surf-disturbed shallows to the bottom of the cliff. He found the ledge. It was barely a foot wide. Painfully he shoved Rodriguez onto it, almost losing him once, then hauled himself up. The rope was 20 feet short. Quickly the samurai added their loincloths. Now, if Yabu stood, He could just reach the end. They shouted encouragement and began to wait. In spite of Blackthorn's hatred, he had to admire Yabu's courage. Half a dozen times, waves almost engulfed him. Twice Rodriguez was lost, but each time Yabu dragged him back and held his head out of the grasping sea, long after Blackthorn knew that he himself would have given up.
Where do you get the courage, Yabu? Are you just devil-born? All of you?
To climb down in the first place had taken courage. At first, Blackthorn had thought that Yabu had acted out of bravado. But soon he had seen that the man was pitting his skill against the cliff, and almost winning. Then he had broken his fall as deftly as any tumbler. And he had given up with dignity.
Christ Jesus! I admire that bastard! And detest him.
For almost an hour, Yabu set himself against the sea, and against his failing body. And then, in the dusk, Takatashi came back with the ropes. They made a cradle and shinned down the cliff with a skill that Blackthorn had never seen ashore. Quickly, Rodriguez was brought aloft. Blackthorn would have tried to succor him, but a Japanese with close-cropped hair was already on his knees beside him. He watched as this man, obviously a doctor, examined the broken leg. Then a samurai held Rodriguez's shoulders as the doctor leaned his weight on the foot, and the bone slid back under the flesh. His fingers probed and shoved and reset it, and tied it to the splint. He began to wrap noxious-looking herbs around the angry wound, and then Yabu was brought up. The daimyo shook off any help, waved the doctor back to Rodriguez, sat down, and began to wait. Blackthorn looked at him. Yabu felt his eyes. The two men stared at each other.
Thank you, Blackthorn said finally, pointing at Rodriguez. Thank you for saving his life. Thank you, Yabu-san.
Deliberately, he bowed.
That's for your courage, you black-eyed son of a shit-fested whore.
Yabu bowed back as stiffly, but inside, he smiled.
Part 2 Chapter 10 Their journey from the bay to Osaka was uneventful. Rodriguez's rudders were explicit and very accurate. During the first night, Rodriguez regained consciousness. In the beginning, he thought he was dead, but the pain soon reminded him differently.
They've set your leg and dressed it, Blackthorn said. And your shoulder's strapped up. It was dislocated. They wouldn't bleed you, much as I tried to make them.
When I get to Osaka, the Jesuits can do that.
Rodriguez's tormented eyes bored into him.
How did I get here, Inglés? I remember going overboard, but nothing else.
Blackthorn told him.
So now I owe you a life. God curse you.
From the quarterdeck, it looked as though we could make the bay. From the bow, your angle of sight would be a few degrees different. The wave was bad luck.
That doesn't worry me, Inglés. You had the quarterdeck. You had the helm. We both knew it. No. I curse you to hell because I owe you a life now. Ah, Madonna! My leg!
Tears welled because of the pain, and Blackthorn gave him a mug of grog and watched him during the night, the storm abating. The Japanese doctor came several times and forced Rodriguez to drink hot medicine and put hot towels on his forehead and opened the portholes. And every time the doctor went away, Blackthorn closed the portholes, for everyone knew that disease was airborne, that the tighter closed the cabin, the safer and more healthy, when a man was as bad as Rodriguez. At length, the doctor shouted at him and posted a samurai on the portholes, so they remained open. At dawn, Blackthorn went on deck. Hiromatsu and Yabu were both there. He bowed like a courtier.
Konnichiwa. Osaka?
They bowed in return.
Osaka! Hi, Anjin-san, Hiromatsu said. Hi, Isogi, Hiromatsu-sama. Captain-san, weigh anchor.
Hi, Anjin-san.
He smiled involuntarily at Yabu. Yabu smiled back, then limped away, and Blackthorn thought, "That's one hell of a man, although he's a devil and a murderer. Aren't you a murderer too?" "Yes, but not that way," he told himself. Blackthorn conned the ship to Osaka with ease. The journey took that day and the night, and just after dawn the next day, they were near the Osaka roads. A Japanese pilot came aboard to take the ship to her wharf, so relieved of his responsibility, he gladly went below to sleep. Later, the captain shook him awake, bowed, and pantomimed that Blackthorn should be ready to go with Hiromatsu as soon as they docked.
Wakarimasuka, Anjin-san?
Right. The seaman went away. Blackthorn stretched his back, aching, then saw Rodriguez watching him. How do you feel?
Good, Inglés. Considering my leg's on fire, my head's bursting, I want a piss, and my tongue tastes like a barrel of pig shit looks.
Blackthorn gave him the chamber pot, then emptied it out the porthole. He refilled the tankard with grog.
You make a foul nurse, Inglés. It's your black heart.
Rodriguez laughed, and it was good to hear him laugh again. His eyes went to the rudder that was open on the desk, and to his sea chest. He saw that it had been unlocked.
Did I give you the key?
No. I searched you. I had to have the true rudder. I told you when you woke the first night.
That's fair.
I don't remember, but that's fair.
Listen, Inglés, ask any Jesuit where Vasco Rodriguez is in Osaka, and they'll guide you to me. Come to see me. Then you can make a copy of my rudder, if you wish.
Thanks. I've already taken one. At least, I copied what I could, and I've read the rest very carefully.
Thy mother,
Rodriguez said in Spanish.
And thine.
Rodriguez turned to Portuguese again.
Speaking Spanish makes me want to retch, even though you can swear better in it than any language.
There's a package in my sea chest. Give it to me, please.
The one with the Jesuit seals?
Yes. He gave it to him. Rodriguez studied it, fingering the unbroken seals, then seemed to change his mind and put the package on the rough blanket under which he lay, leaning his head back again.
Ah, Inglés. Life is so strange.
Why?
If I live, it is because of God's grace, helped by a heretic and a Japman. Send the Saudi to below, so I can thank him, eh?
Now?
Later.
All right.
This fleet of yours, the one you claim's attacking Manila, the one you told the father about. What's the truth, Inglés?
A fleet of warships will wreck your empire in Asia, won't it?
Is there a fleet?
Of course.
How many ships were in your fleet?
5. The rest are out to sea, a week or so. I came ahead to probe Japan and got caught in the storm.
More lies, Inglés. But I don't mind. I've told my captors as many. There are no more ships or fleets. Wait and see. I will.
Rodriguez drank heavily. Blackthorn stretched and went to the porthole, wanting to stop this conversation, and looked out at the shore and the city.
I thought London was the biggest city on earth, but compared to Osaka, it's a small town.
They've dozens of cities like this one, Rodriguez said, also glad to stop the cat-and-mouse game that would never bear fruit without the rack.
Miyako, the capital, or Kyoto, as it's sometimes called, is the biggest city in the empire, more than twice the size of Osaka, so they say. Next comes Edo, Torunaga's capital. I've never been there, nor any priest or Portuguese. Torunaga keeps his capital locked away, a forbidden city. Still,
Rodriguez added, lying back in his bunk and closing his eyes, his face stretched with pain.
Still, that's no different to everywhere. All Japan's officially forbidden to us, except the ports of Nagasaki and Hirado.
Our priests rightly don't pay much attention to the orders and go where they please. But we seamen can't.